it was the entirety of the work. It was a registered work, just like a movie. It was done with the intent to defraud. It was done with the
When you say intent to defraud? Who's being defrauded?
Denims was dumb enough to say, do not watch it on Ethan's stream, watch it on my stream. Meaning you were defrauding by...
fraud here. You could argue maybe like torturous interference or something. There's no fraud going on. Everybody knows that they're watching a React stream of Denims and she doesn't have a contract or an agreement with Ethan. There's no defrauding here.
I'll give you odds, Steve, if you want to do a bet.
On what? Whether she loses?
Yes.
Okay, 10 to 1.
You need to give me like 10,000 to 1.
I'll do 10 to 1.
That's free money, Dan.
10 to 1, so 90%. How about 75 to 100? How about that? I think that's fair. 3 to 4.
Oh, that's almost one-to-one odds on you screaming about how confident you are every single day that she's 100% lost the case. Why the fuck would I give you one-to-one odds on that? No, what?
Activist judge.
5 to 1 at best.
All right, I'll take it. The end pay up. Hey, half of the case is still going, and I believe that there will be... he'll definitely appeal it. He fucking has to. There's no way. You think he's going to go out in an L?
Whatever that first section is, that first section seems kind of cooked, but I don't know how many more...
Well, no, I'll tell you what's cooked about the whole fucking thing. You want to know what's cooked about the whole thing?
What?
Like, I always said 90% chance that this is a W for Ethan, but never in any fucking world was it get dismissed in summary judgment. That's just like in no.
Well, not even summary judgment. This is, I think, motion to dismiss stage. So even
exactly like that's just brain dead. And I don't think that we'll see any attorneys that are like, oh yeah, that makes sense to do that. I think that it's definite appeal fodder. And I think that when it goes to that point, that Denims will be fucked.
Well, what do you think? Well, like, what part of the ruling for that? How many different cases are there against Denims?
There's the other one. So there was two copyright cases. There's the one against the Nuke, and then one for the Countdown show, where there wasn't any really commentary. So she's even more dead to rights there. But I don't even care about the fact that he'll win on the second case. The issue is that if he appeals this, first off, I'm willing to bet the MPAA would just fucking flat out fund the entire thing, because you can't have a world where Twitch streamers are able to stream the entirety of a movie that's in theaters right now that came out today.
Well, matches this though. No,
it does. It does in every way, because if you think about it, this was a piece of content that was protected by copyright, so it was illegally redistributed. Okay. Right? Like, the fact that it's in a movie theater has no bearing on anything.
I don't know if... I feel like the first factor having to do with, like, the nature of the work would change this quite a bit. Like, a Marvel movie, the reaction to that is going to be a lot different than, like an opinionated documentary piece. Like,
that's true and untrue, right? Do you think that movies that come out that are documentaries should have no protection then?
I didn't say no protection, but probably far less. Yeah, you could probably make a larger argument.
Okay, so like any of the Anthony Bourdain shit is just like, you can just do what you want with it in your mind. Well, not do what you want, but you think that there's way less protection for all Anthony Bourdain shit ever.
What is Anthony Bourdain the chef?
Yeah, like the chef guy who goes around and like interviews people. That's not fiction. It's nonfiction.
What is he doing political commentary?
There's nothing in copyright about political commentary.
That's going to heavily inform, I think, how you view the nature of the work.
Where does it say in the four stages of copyright that political commentary has some special thing as opposed to going around interviewing? It's fiction versus nonfiction.
I seriously doubt that. I'm pretty sure that it's going to be for like a Marvel movie. Like it's a movie that you watch for entertainment. I don't know how much meaningful reaction or whatever you're going to be able to give to transform the nature of that work. Whereas if it was like a interview series of people about like climate change or something, you could probably make a much stronger argument reacting or watching or reviewing the entirety of that thing.
So one of the factors of fair use is the nature of the work, as you suggested. But there, you know, so it's we have the four factors, right? I'll just pull this up. Hold on. I want to make sure I'm not... Okay, so the purpose and the character of the use. So is the new work commercial or nonprofit? So that would be one. So for instance, if I took your stream and then I started selling it on the street, that would mean that I am...
It would probably cut against you, sure.
Well, it's not... No, you lose... Like, it's like these are like kind of yes or no's. Like, are you... Like,
you
are
yes
you
or no?
Yes or no for this? Well, that's how it works. They look at like you won on two, lost on two. Won on three, lost on one. That's how it is. So if I was to go sell fucking Destiny GG streams on the street, bootlegged, I would lose on the purpose and character of the use, because I would be obviously doing
Sure, well, that's what I mean when I say cut against you. It would cut against you, sure.
Well, yeah, that's one of the four. But like, you lose on that one then, right? At that point. But there's
But I don't think
here,
all
like...
of these are like weighed equally. Like, you could probably lose hardcore on one of these.
That is true.
And like, win on the other three, or you could, or vice versa. So I imagine that would cut against you if you're making money off of it. Sure.
Absolutely true. So there is a heavy weighting on the four factors. In fact, let me see if I can. I looked at this before. Hold on, I'm typing. Okay. I'm going to see what it comes back with. Okay, so yeah, that would be the one, right? If you're selling it or not selling it. The second one is basically what we spoke about before, which is fiction versus nonfiction, artistic or not artistic. So the reasoning for this is like, if there's a man lands on moon story, that this is going to have less protection than an Avengers thing, which is purely fictional artistic, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So there's that. So I think we would both say that what Ethan put together was a mix, maybe you could say, right? It's kind of a documentary, but there's also humor interspersed. It's artistic, etc. But it does also fall back on past clips of events, and he's telling a story through...
I would say it's heavily, we would consider it a factual work. Absolutely. There might be like artistic elements.
No, I don't think I would agree with that.
Okay, I would disagree. Absolutely not even close to half and half. Nothing about it is like a creative work or like an imaginative work or a fictional.
Really? You think that?
No, it's
interesting.
I think
you don't think it was creative work at all? Like, he had like graphics and crazy shit going on there.
You can have graphics and crazy shit, but it's all in the service of like a documentary factual delivery of information, right? Like, what was the Michael Moore movie, Fahrenheit, was it Fahrenheit 9/11 or whatever? I never actually watched this, but a lot of people talked about it. No, stop, video games.
I thought you were talking about the book, sorry.
No, Michael Moore made a documentary called Fahrenheit 9/11. And this is like, there was a lot of creativity in the images and the graphics and the presentation and all that, but this would be largely considered like a work of fact. Like, he's interviewing people and giving factual statements, and there might be some creativity in here, but it's not like creating like a fictional world or a fictional universe or like a magical stuff for like Harry Potter or whatever. It's just like cleverly or creatively showing you that's the sequel. Okay, I don't know, whatever.
Anyways, regardless, so this factor, which is the second factor, mm-hmm. is the least important of the four. This is like if you have to give it a weight, it's less than 10% of the value of determining if something is fair use or not, this particular factor. So it's not really particularly relevant on determining anything at all. The fact that something is like a fiction or nonfiction, it has very little bearing. And you can
wait. Why are we saying that?
No, it's just that you can just go ask. Like, courts have said repeatedly that it's the least important of the four factors, and they usually don't even decide a case on it ever. And judges routinely say it carries little weight or is not much help. That's like the bitch boy of all the other ones. The big two dogs are the purpose and character and the effect on the market. And then I guess maybe like a deciding one is the amount and the substantiality. But the reason I'm saying that is that's why I'm saying when the Avengers movie things matter here is because we can't, like, okay, if you're going to say, oh, well, it's Avengers, so it's different. Well, it doesn't matter. Even if it was a documentary, like, the courts don't really give a shit about this factor to begin with. The second factor is like, not super fucking important when it comes to determining this. And that's what courts say. They say it on it. So when you look at it, if you're just relying on the other three factors, if that's the case, then you have someone who's going to use 100% of a piece of content that was just released, illegally redistribute it, profit off of it, and affect the market. Because I think there's no doubt that Ethan would have had, if no one was restreaming Ethan Klein's Content Nuke, he would have had 2 to 3 times more viewers. I don't think anyone can deny that that's a fact.
I would deny that.
Well, you're retarded then.
You think
if there was no way, if it was
more?
Impossible, yes. If it was impossible to watch Ethan Klein's copyright, or sorry, the Content Nuke.
If you think that views would have doubled because these retards streamed it, then you're lost.
Oh, you're just delusional. You're actually delusional about
how many views are on the video right now.
I'm talking about live streams when it came out. I'm not
live streams.
About,
all right.
Yeah. During the live stream. That's what I mean. When it was streamed when it first came out, which has an effect. I don't know how many viewers. Does anyone know how many viewers Ethan had on the live view when it was going?
I think for this to matter, it has to be considered an equivalent thing, though. So, like, if I make a review of somebody's thing that is trashing that thing or showing it in a completely different light. Even if I consume 90% of the market compared to what that original viewing was, if my work is transformative, it's not really considered, because that's not considered like the same market.
Okay, so like, if you had example, like, I think you would get behind.
Well, and I think I'm just saying, like, let's say Ethan had 20,000 live viewers. Let's say Denham's had a million live viewers. If Denham's work is considered transformative, then that part of the effect on the market is not relevant because it's a new item that's been created, and that's not considered to cut it. Like, that wouldn't cut against her if it's not the same thing as what Ethan was showing. So if you can make the, if you've made the argument that you have engaged in some like transformative process or whatever, then that new product is not considered in competition with the old one. It's just a new market. That.
So I would disagree with the, on the simple premise that if the second one did not exist, it would the customers would be going to the first one. So by the act of cannibalizing the first one, even to do your commentary, has removed the market value of the first one.
Yeah, but just it doesn't matter. You're allowed to remove market values of things. I get to give a bad review.
Well, no, because that is the thing. That's the thing it's saying. What's the effect on the market? It's not saying, is it transformative? Then you're allowed to affect the market. This is a separate cause called effect on the market, specifically in there. It doesn't make use of like, oh, but it's fair. It's an additional thing you have is the effect on the market. It doesn't matter if you're transforming it. This is just a factor that looks specifically, are you affecting the market? And there's no doubt that in some, if someone could have done fucking magic and it was just literally not possible to restream Ethan Klein's content nuke for 24 hours, if it was just technically, I don't know, it was like wizardry that was going on, that he would have had it double, triple, four times the amount of live viewers than he did because of the amount of people that wanted to not give him money and watch it with someone else shitting on him. They would still wanted to consume the content and see what they're saying. Much in the same way, let's say that Hassan had a very hyped up piece coming out about shitting on Destiny, like some long ass fucking video, or even not a long, maybe it's a 30-minute video that he did himself. It's his very first feature film, and it's called Destiny the Raper. Okay, and he's doing a premiere for it. Bet your ass that like there'd probably be someone in DGG restreaming it, and you would say, oh well, that doesn't matter, you know, like these people, you know, they hate Hassan, they would never watch it there. But the truth is, if the stream was not in here, we would watch it there. Because we would want to see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. But if I were to be restreaming it and I were to be pausing and commenting to give the exact opposite take as what the original is, I don't think this fair use factor cuts against me there. Because
that's a separate factor. We're not talking about are you allowed to criticize it. We're talking about what is the effect on the market specifically. It doesn't say you're allowed to affect the market if you do this. This is just a factor. Do you affect the market?
I mean, you can say that, but I mean, I would have to read the underlying case, but this was one of the things where the judge actually cited the Klein case, where if you're having a dramatically different experience watching whatever that other thing is, that doesn't count as a market substitute for the original product. Because I think this is one of the ones where Denham's won on this factor too, and this is the one where the judge cited the last H3H3 court case.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, well, I'm not an attorney. I'm not a judge. I think that it's delusional, the idea that this could happen, because then what does it really take? Like, are you, give me a hypothetical world then. Let's say that there is a new documentary coming out in movies, and it's the Trump movie or whatever, you know, huge, crazy video, like actual hidden recordings inside the White House, all this crazy stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And are you just saying that, like, you know, because, you know, someone likes Trump, that they can go and just steal that and watch it live the entirety, as long as they're like, oh, yeah, classic against this? No, they can't. You can't use 100% of the work just because you claim to dislike someone. Even, you know,
what does critique. That was that even remotely close? Try a different hypothetical that actually mirrors the argument I made. I want to see if you're even able to do it, because that was completely not even remotely close to what we were saying before.
All right. Well, let me give it a second.
You're being bad faith, Dan.
I'm not trying to be bad faith.
It would be the equivalent to making a documentary on Trump.
Well,
let's say somebody makes a documentary on Trump and it's shitting on him the whole time.
I understand. I can do it again. These people dislike Ethan Klein and they didn't want to give him views. Is the main reasoning in their mind that they watched it with other people so he wouldn't have views, and then they get, you know, one of their funny friends to shit on the video at the same time. But that can't be a bar, because who's to decide if this is authentic hatred or if this is people that,
so the motivation isn't relevant, and I feel like.
Pay. That's where you're wrong.
No.
Because what about? Well, hear me out.
I don't have to hear you out. I'm just. Did you read through the judge's decision?
Yes.
Because I feel like this was part of the areas where the things listed in the complaint were actually hurting Ethan, because he was saying things like, even though I was making the argument about this, Denham's, while watching it, was using my content to make the exact opposite argument. That's a transformative experience. That means that they're using the original content and they're doing something completely different with it than what Ethan had originally intended. So it's not just like a person giggling along or whatever. It's like you're doing something completely different than what the original work was, which would argue in favor of it being transformative. The judge was citing a lot from Ethan's complaint. What he has to, obviously, because on a motion to dismiss, you have to read the complaint as being completely true and then just rule on a fact of law. But it seems like even Ethan was saying that people watching the nuke are going to get a totally different takeaway than what he intended.
Well, it would be people that dislike the content watching it without paying for it. There must be some fucking genre of movies that you hate or something, like Scary Movie or something, right?
Sure.
Okay, let's say that you fucking really hate Scary Movie. You think it's trash, the worst movie series of all time, don't understand why it exists. And let's say a new Scary Movie comes out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would be fair and realistic for you to be able to watch the movie live and stream it on the same day and just shitting on it the whole time, watching the entirety of it with chat?
I don't know as much for that because, remember, creative works are weighed a lot differently than works of fact.
Okay, not scary. The new Louis Theroux thing that's in theaters, like, whatever.
You would have a stronger argument for that one, yeah.
So you would feel comfortable doing that, you think?
Well, I don't know if I would want to go to court and fight over it. But in terms of, like, if I had to hold a gun to my head and if I'd win the lawsuit...
I disregard this. No, because the second factor, people don't give a shit about it. And you can't rely on that heavily for this. You can't say, oh, well, the second factor, you know, because it's real versus not... It's just a silly thing to try and leverage that much on that, especially when judges don't even rely on it as a second factor. They literally say they don't give a shit about the second factor.
So, which one was the second factor again?
The second factor is fiction or nonfiction, essentially. Basically, the nature of the work, courts almost never decide cases on this, and judges routinely say it carries little weight or is not much help.
If I had to guess why, I'm totally fucking making this up, and we could read through some court decisions you want. My guess is because those are almost always probably auto losses, because the idea of creating a transformative derivative product off of some kind of highly creative work is probably almost unthinkable. Like how could you react to Harry Potter in a way that would actually create a non-copyright infringing work?
Mystery theater 9,000? 1,000? 3,000?
I don't think those guys are really transforming the work either. It's a different experience.
They kind of argue that they do, right?
I feel like you're getting about the same experience almost as maybe was intended by the movie maker watching it then.
So yeah, and those guys, they actually had to, I do think this is correct, Chatter said this, they paid for the rights, and I think it was always old videos as well.
Yeah,
and
most
it was
people not do, just to be...
And yeah, and it was not on release day. So even if you give me this, okay, say... Okay. Just for the sake of argument, say that the second factor doesn't matter. For the sake of argument, because okay. I think it will help things put into perspective. If we say that the second factor, meaning fiction or nonfiction, is irrelevant, no one gives a shit, then you're at a situation where there's a movie coming out in the movie theaters today that the content creator would get money for if all these people went to go watch and pay for a ticket, or, you know, were subscribed to a streaming service to get it, or watched ads, etc. So there's money that's being taken from the person by not watching it. And you, as a hater... are now just, you know, everyone knows Steve hates Fast and the Furious, so we're going to watch it with him instead. Do you think that that is an acceptable case, and what is the proof that we need for that to be the case? And also, here's the other issue, is that the simple copying and redistributing of that content creates a mechanism where now you're going to say this is fair use, but can I upload my fair use to YouTube? Can someone then download my fair use thing and then basically get every new movie that's in the theaters without and just cut out your parts and do it that way?
I mean, if it's fair use, then that would be the argument, right? Yeah.
So that would be the end of essentially copyright protection on movies then, no?
Wait, how would that be the end? Because if it's fair use, it's your own product and you can upload it, sure.
So, okay. Avengers comes out today.
Okay.
Somehow, and doesn't the mechanism doesn't really matter here, right? Whether you're having a camcorder that you're copying the... you know, you're going to the theater and doing it, or you're at home copying it and making a new thing, the mechanism of copying a piece of content is irrelevant in the scope of making the system, right? It's an unauthorized copy that you are now going to react and create a new piece of content to. There's nothing in here that says, oh, a movie gets a... if you're in a cinema, you get a special piece of protection. There's nothing in here that says that. So that's why I'm trying to make the point. Like, if a brand new Avengers movie comes out and I somehow copy it and get it here on my computer and then release a cut, the Saltman cut, that is three times longer with me shitting on it, you think that I can release that on YouTube the same day?
I mean, if it's copyright protected by the... if you win a case on fair use, then yeah, you would be able to.
Wait. I guess I'm not expecting you to agree with this. So you think that it's realistic that a movie, the fucking brand new Avengers movie out today...
I don't know if there's a reaction that would win on fair use for that, but...
Why not? Let's say I fucking hate Avengers completely. Like, I just fucking hate this motherfucker, and everyone knows I hate the fucking Avengers. And I just spend every 3 minutes, I pause and I fucking shit on the Avengers. I look how bad this green screen is, but the entirety of the movie.
I don't know if
there.
You, Dan Saltman, just hating on the movie, I don't know if that would rise to the level of transformative work. But let's say that.
What if I criticize
let's say
it as
that
well?
Snyder, let's say that Snyder and a couple other actors,
yeah,
they wanted to watch and react to the entire Avengers movie, and it's like a 2 hour movie, and their entire reaction is 4 hours long, and they're pausing and they're criticizing the performances.
Yep.
Snyder's saying, I've worked with this director before, like,
agreed,
this is bullshit, and then they keep going. That might survive on fair use. I don't know, maybe
on launch day.
Maybe
on launch day for something that should only be in theaters.
It might,
because now everyone can just go download this off YouTube and they can just skip and watch the whole movie.
Well, the question,
right,
would be, how would they get the theater footage?
Well, that's the irrelevant part. There's nothing mentioned in here about that, right? Because the simple act, admittedly, of getting a piece of copyrighted work and copying it is always illegal until it's not, right? So it's irrelevant. Saying that you can't get a copy, that's a technical restriction, not a legal restriction. Like, is it illegal to make a copy of a movie in a movie theater? Yes. It's also illegal to make a copy of a movie that you watch on your fucking computer, right? These are all both things that are true. There's not a special protection that you get.
I'm lost on this one, I'm not sure. Here, we can read through these and we can, which part of this do you disagree with, I guess. So these are the, going through the four factors. The first one is the purpose and character of the use. So A, transformative nature. The defendant moves
this,
for...
Oh, the H3 one? I think this is retarded. Here's my...
Well, then just say which part is retarded. You're going to say which part you think is retarded.
No. It's retarded because this should never have happened at this stage to dismiss. So it's almost like, how can I even give this any serious critique when they... This is mental. This, like, you've been in court for a year and they don't have a fucking witness and you're not getting discovery. The fact that he
Hold
had
on,
all this of
this
is, crazy
wait,
shit
wait, this
is mental.
Well, this is a lot different because fair use arguments are... Like, was the Ethan Klein case, was that a jury trial?
Yeah. I think it didn't even go... it went to an appeal as well.
But was it a jury that ultimately tried it? Because I feel like
jury versus judge trial?
Fair use... These are like all very legalistic arguments. You're not really, I don't know if you're having very much dispute in fact, which is what a jury is supposed to dispute, right? The reason why we go to trial for like my case is because there's a question of, did he actually send the video to this girl? Is this person lying about this thing? These are disputes in fact that a jury needs to weigh the validity on. But when it's like a dispute in law, like, well, okay, I did do this and they're saying I did this, but I think it should be legal and they think it should be illegal. That's for a judge to decide. So motion to dismiss, motion for summary judgment are probably going to be similar-ish here unless something about these four factors can be dug up that would come out in evidence, but I don't even know what could inform that.
Well, like, I mean, in this situation, so the problem is that I think all of the factors weigh against, like, you could say that there's a commentary there, and there is, you know, she did pause and talk.
Well, sure, I'm just saying we can just read through this and you can tell me what part you could disagree with, and we just go run it down like that. So.
Okay.
The first factor is the purpose and character of the use. A is transformative nature. The defendant moves for judgment on the pleadings in part because of the transformative nature of her use. The first, and then quoting, the first statutory factor examines the purpose and character of the use, including whether such use is of a commercial nature or is for nonprofit educational purposes. This factor has taken on a heightened significance because it influences the lens through which we consider two other fair use factors. The central inquiry under the first factor is whether the new work is transformative. The term transformative does not appear in this case, yet it permeates copyright analysis. Transformative works add something new to an existing work, endowing the first with new expression, meaning, or message, rather than merely superseding the objects of the original creation. The court in Campbell held that the central purpose of this investigation is to see whether the new work merely supersedes the object of the original creation, or instead adds something new with a further purpose or different character, altering the first with a new expression, meaning, or message. It asks, in other words, whether and to what extent the new work is transformative. In contrast, commentary that has no critical bearing on the substance or style of the original composition, which the alleged infringer merely uses to get attention or to avoid the drudgery in working up something fresh, the claim to fairness in borrowing from another's work diminishes accordingly. So here, when you were talking about like the Marvel movie, where you just like snark and every like 3 minutes you're like, oh, this sucks or whatever. Seems like it would be more like you're just watching it to ride off the back of
that. Let's say that I was, hypothetically, let's say I'm the every frame a painting guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that? Can he go do it? Can he just go steal every brand new fucking movie that's in the theaters and upload it to YouTube?
Probably not.
Knowing, why not?
Because just stealing a movie and uploading it to YouTube has no bearing on.
Not with his commentary. Obviously, going through it and it's 3 times longer, but the entire movie is there.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know how that would be weighed.
Well, don't you dare give. You can't take a hard stance on here and then not answer that question because that's not fair. You can't say, "Oh, this makes sense. I have a lot of, I see where the judge went on this, and I get why it went this way." And then when I give you a similar situation, be like, "Well, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. You tell me that for the first time."
Yes,
like,
then I would say yes. It would be fine. Yes, it would be fine.
Don't you fucking do that shit. You have to accept the fact that this ruling would allow that to happen. The ruling would allow, if this stands, the idea that if I'm a fucking god reviewer of movies, that I could upload a brand new fucking movie to YouTube.
I don't know if simply reviewing a movie counts as a transformative work.
Fine, then I fucking hate it. I'm shitting on it. Whatever the fuck you think that
Denim's
did. I don't
know if just hating or shitting on Denim's. The idea would be that they watched a political piece, and from that political piece, they spawned a take that was basically entirely contrary to that piece. So they've given like a new, like a totally different take. They're not just superseding the original, to quote whatever this Campbell case was. They're giving something that's a new product that stands in contrast to the prior one.
Yeah, so my thing on Avengers would have nothing to do with the movie. 100% of my commentary would be about the scene lighting and the outfits that they're wearing and how things are juxtaposed on stream and everything. It would be nothing about the movie. Completely. And who would watch that when all I'm talking about is set design? Completely crazy. But 100% of the movie would be on YouTube in that case.
Then I guess it would be up for a judge to decide and weigh the other factors on as well.
I feel like you won't. Here's my point.
I think on the macro level, courts generally, when we think of, I hate to do constitution shit because gender is not relevant, but when we think about like the core First Amendment protections, okay, if you're talking about a fantasy movie, this is where copyright and the concept of copyrighted protections is literally at its peak, strongest potential. These are the things that copyright is designed to protect more than anything else, is creative works of fiction. When you think of political documentaries that are trying to make a political statement, this is going to be the exact opposite. This is where our First Amendment protections are at the peak, the height of what they're supposed to protect, is critical commentary about other people's political opinions. So I understand that you want to keep leaning into this like Marvel movie react or whatever.
No, I disagree with that completely. This is not that. This is making fun of Hassan Piker, a streamer, and a fucking Twitch, the video company. Okay.
Now, nobody on the planet that's in court will ever agree with that take. It is one of the most politically divisive issues of our time, and the nuke centers itself around the most divisive political issue of our time right now, which is Israel-Palestine. If you want to just pretend that it was just like a LOL poke fun at Hassan video, you're just completely not in the same world. It's completely wrong.
What about Schindler's List? So this was based on real events, things that happened, right?
No. Schindler's List is a work of fiction.
Hacksaw Ridge.
It's a work of
fiction.
Deepwater
Horizon.
It's a work of fiction.
With
actors, with dramatizations, with directors, and like, these are works of fiction. It's not even remotely the same thing.
Okay. But again, even if I was to lead what you're saying here, it's a 10% factor on what you're saying.
We'll just get through this and we'll go to the next ones after. But this thing is weighing in on the first factor, is to consider whether the new work is transformative or not.
But there's nothing in here that says anything about politics. Like in the fair use and the four factors, there's nothing in here that says, oh, politics gets a special baby gloves.
I'm giving you this from the macro perspective because if you look somebody in the face and you say, well, I did a 2-hour reaction to this 2-hour Marvel movie where I'm giving commentary on it, people are just going to look at you and they'll be like,
I got it. Boxing event.
Okay.
You just fucked yourself. That's this. So I can restream a boxing event if I stop and pause every 5 minutes and say how much that these guys are not. Well, you were heavily leaning on the idea of something being fictional or non-fictional as the idea of it being a very important thing of political commentary or it being real people doing things. This is just a real life event that's happening right now. There's no actors. It's two men that are creating a piece of content at the same time. Two men in the ring, and I'm there, and I'm just going to be talking about, something irrelevant to it. Either I'll be saying
something irrelevant to it. How is that transformative then?
This is why we need to ban boxing. Look at that move right there. That could have just give this man a concussion. I'm a doctor. I'm going in there talking about how this entire thing right here is.
Then that might be protected. I don't know if anybody's done it before.
It wouldn't be. There's no world ever.
If a doctor were to get a couple doctors or whatever.
Dr. K can like live stream a fucking movie and give commentary. Live stream.
Why are you changing the example now? If you want to change the example.
No, I'm not. Dr. K live streaming UFC.
Why are we talking Dr. K? He's a psychiatrist. If you take a physio,
Oh, this guy's probably thinking right now. The other guy's tired.
Yeah, keep changing it. Yep.
I don't think I'm changing
it. You are. You're changing it. This guy's tired? How is that contrary to boxing?
No, not tired. The idea would be that someone like Dr. K could be like trying to understand.
That's not transformative.
You're not letting me speak on this.
Well, every time I try to talk to your example, you're changing it to something completely different. You went from a doctor analyzing saying boxing is a horrible sport because of the injuries, and now you're saying Dr. K is watching
this
to
is
analyze the mental
state.
This is
all hinging on this 10% factor, and it's not.
We don't have to keep drilling on it. I can just read the thing. We can go on to the next factor. I mean.
No, because I feel like you're trying to take a W on this factor, and I'm showing you why it doesn't matter. Like, some of the most police content is not fiction. It's UFC and boxing. These are things that are live streamed, and they take extremely serious if you're trying to restream it. And the idea that someone out there
the reason why is because it's hard to understand what the transformative content would be based on restreaming a boxing event. So I don't know how you could make that into something different. We could probably sit and think of one, but watching it, for the sake of argument,
let's assume that we can. So I don't have to come up.
Okay, well
now
you're intuition pumping that we can't even think of an example, but you want me to defend the hypothetical example?
No, I could think of an example very, very easily. I could think of one, but you just don't like the ones that I'm giving to you when I do it.
Because don't sound very transformative. I don't think that the purpose of watching a boxing event is that it's saying that it's healthy and good for the body. I think it's that it's just an entertaining thing to watch.
I mean, that's if you like boxing. What about if you hate boxing? Or what about if you're only interested in another aspect of it? What about if you're a world-renowned researcher that deals specifically with cardiovascular health and how the human body can endure shocks? And
sure, I think you could do that. I think that if you had a doctor...
Can I finish? Why do you keep cutting me off?
I think you could live stream the event if you had a cardiologist and a physical therapist or whatever, and they were watching the event, and they had some way to key in on like the fucking heart rates of the people, and they were live watching, and they were pausing every 5 minutes in a 1 hour boxing event, or I don't know how long, 10 rounds or whatever lasts. They've got like a 30-minute thing, and they make it stretch it out to an hour, and they're going like, you can see here that his heart is super stressed, and these people might die, and this is why it's a horrible event, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe you could, sure, in that event, sure.
Okay. So that would be for a live event, and that would be the type of thing that people in general would want to go back and do replays. So having that on YouTube now, if there was a crazy event, like let's say a Tyson biting off someone's ear, now essentially if people wanted to, there's a full copy of this event online, right? Anyone who wants to go watch the new boxing fight, the new Avengers movie, the new whatever it's going to be, they can just go to youtube.com/Dr. K, you know, fucking analyzes the whatever on this and watch the entire movie on that way. And that's kind of something I don't think that we can allow to have happen in the MPAA. I think they would never allow that type of ruling to stand.
Couldn't we theoretically do this?
Go find me like the new fucking Avengers movie uploaded and staying.
We're not talking about what's uploaded. First of all, these things have existed a lot, so I don't even know why you would use that. There are plenty of times in the past where people would just upload 12-minute segments of a movie, put them all in a playlist.
No, I'm not saying 12 minutes. I'm saying the entirety.
You're saying the entirety, but it's twice as long because there's commentary cutting it all up.
Well, the entire thing is still there, though.
What? Doesn't Mahler's channel literally do this? Every movie, a painting, or whatever the fuck?
No, they don't do the entire movie.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure there's a...
They do the entire movie. Because I did like 6 hours of these once.
Wait, hold on. Mahler, wait, I want to see this. And this is on launch day that they're doing this?
Every frame of... No, I don't think it's on launch day, but I don't know if that's not the
factor
that
we're... How long after the movie has been released?
That's not the factor that we're analyzing right now. If you want to bring in another factor, that might cut against it, but...
Well, no. There's two factors, and neither of them we're talking about right now. I mean, we are, but we shouldn't be. The two factors we're talking about are the effect on the market and then the proportion of it used. Those would be both things we're talking about.
I thought we were talking about the first one, which is the purpose and character of the use, and then we're talking about the transformative nature of it. That's what I'm reading through on this part.
Yeah, so I think that the purpose in this case, I would say... Oh, it's good. Let's get re-railed onto this. This particular first factor. So you think that this is a transformative by itself. You think this is transformative to watch
Well, the judge did. We can read his decision. You can tell me what part of this you can disagree with. I'll read the next paragraph. The court deems the defendant's use as transformative. Throughout the live stream, defendant provides commentary pertaining to criticism of the nuke. The defendant contends that the nuke resembles a, quote, high school video project, end quote, or, quote, middle school project, end quote. During the subject live stream, defendant complains about the documentary's editing and that the video treats the audience as morons and is attempting to trick them. The complaint further states that she frequently makes comments that are later contradicted by the nuke itself. So these are citing from Ethan's filing here. Notably, and then the judge says, the fair use inquiry does not ask whether the criticism or parody of the copyrighted work is just or accurate or mean-spirited, but simply whether the use is the kind that copyright is designed to protect. Finding fair use, where the copyright... Okay, that's not everything. Okay. Defendant offers other criticism of the subject documentary during her live stream. Following one of the documentary creator's criticisms of Piker's apologia of China's genocide of the Uyghurs, the defendant comments, one, on the treatment of the Uyghurs, two, so much of American media is focused on pointing out how evil China is, three, stating that disabled Americans lose disability benefits when they get married, four, incarceration levels in the United States, and then the live stream ends. Additionally, during the live stream, defendant challenges client's perception of Piker's sentiments regarding the interaction between imports and the fleeing of Jewish people from Israel. Two, disputes client's account of the events of the occurrence of sexual violence of hostages. And three, critiques client's discussion of Twitch's enforcement and moderation decisions. And four, discusses her perspectives on Zionism and Judaism. The court finds defendant's criticism and commentary within the live stream video to demonstrate the following telltale signs of transformative use. One, further purpose or different character in the defendant's work, for example, or such as the creation of new information, new aesthetic, new insights and understanding. And two, the use of quoted material or quoted matter as raw material instead of repackaging it and merely superseding the objects of the original creation. The undisputed purpose of defendant's live stream is to contest, criticize, and mock plaintiff's message, which the courts have found weighs in favor of fair use due to its transformative nature. And then citing Klein's other case, finding that the first factor weighed in defendant's favor is that defendant's reaction video was quintessential criticism and comment. And then another case, finding transformative use where host reacted to and commented on original videos, something else. Do you disagree with any of that so far? Or
I think that the video should be allowed to be online, but I don't think that you should be able to have the entirety of the duration if you're going to do this level of market effect, is what I would say.
Sure, so market effect I think is going to be a different one, but we can
No, it is a different one, but I think, would you say, is this transformative by itself?
The issue is that if it's transformative, then the market effect is an auto loss. Because there's not considered to be a market substitute, even if it takes away from the original. That's why the transformative analysis.
Are you sure on that?
Yeah, that's why the transformative analysis is so.
I don't think that's the case. I think that you can lose on the market, or sorry, you can lose on the transformative, but win on the market effect. I don't think so
because it would because the argument
would be
four
factors, not like one factor plus three others.
This factor influences two others though, which is why I think this,
so the other ones influence this one as well. But you, there's probably almost how would we ask this question to see if that's the case? What would we say? Which factor is this we're talking about?
We could read what they're quoting from when they say this.
Okay, purpose and character. So I would ask, has there ever been a lawsuit where the first factor? How would I phrase this? I'm trying to think of the best way to put this.
Can you lose on the first factor and win on the fourth factor?
Or win on the other three? I'll ask. Hold on. Lost on the first and succeeded on the other three, or succeeded on the first and lost on the other three? Fuck it. I'll just do both. Let's see what happens. All right. I feel like AI is making me dumber.
That's what all the analysis saying a lot. Does, you know?
Claude's thinking. It's because I'm a really good prompter. You know Dr. Seuss was racist?
I wasn't every white man before 1980.
Yeah, but apparently he was like a really big racist.
Oh,
I got one. I think I already told some people. You're not going to believe this when I tell you. You ready for this shit?
Okay.
Gorillas don't drink water.
That's not surprising.
Fuck you. It is surprising.
Nope, because they probably eat a lot of fruit or whatever, or grassy shit or whatever, huh?
There's never been a documented instance ever of a gorilla drinking water.
Oh, well, that's surprising. Okay.
What stands do you use, Steve?
What, you can get any tripod you want.
It just doesn't matter.
Just, I think near.
What about like a C-clamp for your desk?
A C-clamp for what?
Like to put the light on my desk, or should I have it like on a tripod?
Yeah, I just get small tripods. You're good. I think near, NEER, I think might be. They make cheap tripods. It's fine.
All right, never mind. It's a rare video, not a, well, apparently. Maybe he was eating something. You don't know.
Maybe what? Oh, is Claude still thinking?
No, it spit out a lot of shit, and I have a bunch of examples. So Fox News, VTV Eyes.
Okay, wait. So here, this is
Yeah, go ahead.
Was this a Supreme Court on writ of certiorari? I don't know if the Supreme Court heard this or not. I'm reading from this. No, hold on. I should understand this. This is an amicus curiae submitted by
Andy Warhol.
So this is an argument for the... Well, this is just an argument then that one of the people are using, right? It's not necessarily what the court agrees with, but the defense. I don't know why this is quoted then. I'm just going to read the quote there, but...
Okay. All right, fine. Apparently Dr. Seuss wasn't racist. Sorry, Jesus. I guess I got misled. My bad. Jesus,
damn!
People are really fucking mad about this. That and the gorilla thing. Sorry. You know what? No more gorilla facts for you guys. That's it.
Based.
I read it at the fucking Museum of Natural History. I didn't know that they were going to fucking lie to me. Okay? Yeah. It said it right on the thing. Inside. It said it on the thing that a gorilla has never been seen drinking. I thought I could trust the museum. My bad.
Have a beer, Dan.
That's on the museum. That's not on me, by the way.
Agreed.
Just saying.
Are we good? Okay. Or do you want to keep reading through this?
Yeah. No. Well, you weren't reading it out loud. Was I supposed to be reading it on your screen?
Oh, no. I'm just looking at the... I'm selling the court's opinion.
Okay. And what's the cliff notes? Or what's your take on it? I trust you. You would never...
Take on what?
Mislead me. Well, whatever you're reading right now.
I was just looking up the quote for the fact that the first factor can consider how the other two fair use factors are weighed. But it's not a super relevant quote. It's just a statement.
Oh.
What? He's owning you, Dan.
Shut up. No, I'm just reading the judge's opinion.
That's how easy it is to own you, Dan. You just got to read the judge what he said.
I don't think that was a factor against me or him, Mr. Minton. You fucking retard.
You're getting owned right now, man.
All right,
Mr. I'm just reading the next paragraph, okay? The court finds defendant's criticism and commentary within the live stream video to demonstrate the following telltale signs. Wait. We read this already. Okay, the facts here closely aligned with those in Stebbins v. Alphabet, Inc. In Stebbins, the court found the subject live streams to be highly transformative works because the live streams involved the viewing of the subject video for seconds at a time before pausing to respond and critique the subject video. The subject video created by the plaintiff provided the plaintiff's analysis and opinions regarding a video game. The live streams, however, provided commentary on the subject video as well as several hours regarding other videos produced by the plaintiff and his comments thereon. The relevant live stream in Stebbins paused and commented on plaintiff's retrospective with the purpose of reviewing or mocking the video. This criticism is at the heart of the fair use doctrine, and it would lose meaning without reproduction of plaintiff's video. Another case, quoting there, as in Stebbins, defendant's live stream provided commentary on the nuke and sharp criticism of the claims made within the documentary. Throughout the live stream, defendant often paused the nuke to offer spontaneous reactions, engaged with her audience through a live chat, and provided real-time commentary interspersed with tangential discussions. Further, the courts have recognized that the differences in viewing experiences and uses weigh in favor of a finding of fair use. The difference in viewing experiences here is undisputed. Indeed, plaintiff states, where the nuke seeks to expose how Piker radicalizes people online to be anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli, Denham's attempts to use the nuke for the exact opposite purpose, to radicalize her audience to be anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli, along with defending Hassan. In opposition, plaintiff presents unsuccessful arguments. First, plaintiff cites De Frontbrun v. Wofsy for the proposition that the purposes of plaintiff's video and defendant's live stream overlap to undermine defendant's transformative argument. Here, plaintiff has conceded that the purposes of both videos do not overlap by stating, where the nuke seeks to expose how Hassan radicalizes people online to be anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli, Denham's attempts to use the nuke for the exact opposite purpose, to radicalize her audience to be anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli, along with defending Hassan. Additionally, the two subject videos are disparate from the subject works in De Frontbrun, which did overlap in nature. In De Frontbrun, the Picasso project and the subject photographs both presented the works of Picasso with the shared purpose of documenting Picasso's works. As previously established, the subject videos in this matter do not share such an overlapping purpose. Second, plaintiff cites to Mongi v. Maya Mag Inc. for the proposition the defendant engaged in wholesale copying sprinkled with spoken commentary, which the court in Mongi found at best minimally transformative. Defendant's live stream went beyond merely reproducing or supplanting the nuke, however. Rather, as set forth above, the live stream incorporated real-time commentary, criticism, and analysis that altered the purpose and character of the original work. Accordingly, unlike the defendant in Mange, defendant did not simply repackage or republish the underlying work with incidental commentary, but instead used the work in furtherance of a distinct expressive purpose. For the foregoing reasons, the court finds defendant's use to be transformative for this factor, for this part A of this. The second part of the first fair use factor involves whether the new use is commercial, whether the user stands to profit from exploitation of the copyrighted material without paying the customary price. Critically, the more transformative the new work, the less will be the significance of the other factors, like commercialism, that may weigh against a finding of fair use. The commercial use factor concerns the degree to which the new user exploits the copyright for commercial gain, as opposed to incidental use as part of a commercial enterprise. The court in Draft Express found that even if the relevant video were considered at least partially commercial, its transformative nature offsets the significance of any commercialism. So if, like, if you're creating a new product, then it's harder to claim that you're infringing on the copyright of the first by market displacement because it's a new product that you're marketing, basically. Here, defendant contends that her use was not sufficiently commercial to outweigh the transformative. As defendant is a live streamer, she's eligible to receive subscriptions, donations, and advertising revenue during her Twitch broadcast, regardless of the content nature of her use, so there is no doubt that there was a commercial use of the subject work. But the court finds distinguishable defendant's use from the intentional exploitation of copyrighted works for monetary gain that preclude a finding of fair use. Defendant's transformation of the original work heavily outweighs the commercial nature of its use. Because accordingly, under the analysis of the first factor, the court finds the defendant's use weighs in favor of fair use. And that's for the first factor. Do you want to keep reading? Or?
Yeah.
Two is the nature of the copyrighted work. The defendant avers that the documentary and informational nature of the nuke favors fair use. The second statutory factor considers the nature of the copyrighted work. This factor recognizes that creative works are closer to the core of intended copyright protections that in more than informational and fictional or in functional works, with the consequence that fair use is more difficult to establish when the former works are copied. The Ninth Circuit held that this factor addresses two aspects of the work, the extent to which it is creative and whether it is unpublished. The Ninth Circuit has held that a product is creative where it is the product of many technical and artistic decisions. With respect to publication, while a work's unpublished state would weigh against fair use, the converse is not necessarily true. The Ninth Circuit recognized, however, that this second factor has not been terribly significant in the overall fair use balancing. Here, the nuke is a creative work with significant informational contents. As explained by plaintiff, the nuke is a tragicomic documentary critiquing Hassan and Twitch. It contains original footage, highly edited montages, parodic skits, and archival materials. The nuke is divided into seven sections. The first section walks the audience through Ethan's thesis of the nuke, that Hassan radicalizes his audience with genocidal and anti-Semitic terrorist propaganda. The second section involves...
Yeah, we can just skip to the end. So they found that the nuke was not what you said. Said that it weighs against fair use and that it's creative.
Okay. Accordingly, the court finds that the nature of the subject work weighs against defining a fair use as set forth above. However, this factor alone is not terribly significant in the overall fair use balancing. So this is for the second factor.
So this is why I'm saying, like, if this is to them the same as Avengers, then using Avengers as an example is reasonable. Because to them, they said this is Avengers. They didn't say this is not some political thing that needs commentary. They said this is a creative work on this factor. That's what the judge said. Right?
I completely disagree. We're never going to see eye to eye on that. So.
But that's what the judge said.
No,
you can't.
You're looking at it as a binary. None of these are binary. This is a super affirmative defense.
I agree.
Super,
I agree.
So to say that,
I
like,
agree that it's not
do you
binary,
think that Ethan?
But...
So here's a simple question: do you think that Ethan's use is as creative and original in creating a new thing as the Avengers?
No. The Avengers is obviously there's much more that goes into it. It's a much more creative thing. It doesn't use any past VODs. Obviously, there's a difference on that, but it's still creative versus not creative on this finding. It is a binary finding of the court finding for
none
or
of these
against
things.
You on
I don't think any of these things are
absolute.
Binary.
That last line is literally what a binary thing. The court finds that this
it's
factor
literally
is for
not.
The plaintiff
if
or
it
against
was,
the
what,
plaintiff.
If it was, you don't use.
What does the last line mean then?
What do you think weighs against means? Weighs against means it cuts against you, but it's not like a yes or no, like an element, like it satisfies or doesn't satisfy. It weighs against. But it weighs, even the word weighs implies that there could be, it heavily weighs against you, or it completely forecloses another argument. Like, weighs against, all of these things are going to be arguments that have gradients in them. Every single one of these four factors is going to be gradient tier arguments, basically.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the least important one. I said at the start, this is like the 10%, if that. And even the judge is saying that this is not the important one here. But even on this factor, he's saying that it leans towards the direction of it leans more. How about this? It leans more towards Avengers than it does towards political documentary, is what the judges said. I assume you can agree to that.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Three, the amount and substantiality of the portion in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole. The third statutory factor asks whether the amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole favors fair use. The third factor looks to the quantitative amount and qualitative value of the original work used in relation to the justification for that use. The law is clear, however, that quantity alone is not determinative. This factor circles back to the first factor because the extent of permissible copying varies with the purpose and character of the use. The courts have found that copying another work in its entirety is not dispositive as to infringement if necessary for the intended transformative use. A great deal of plaintiff's work with copying, but copying was plainly necessary to the commentary and critique, citing, I think this is Klein's case again, I think.
There's one thing I want to put up, because it took me a while to fucking figure out how to ask this correctly. I asked, essentially, would someone giving full criticism of a movie that came out 20 years ago today that no one fucking wants to watch at all, right? So, I don't know, watching some fucking bum shit that came out 20 years ago, in copyright law, is that treated the same as a movie in the theaters today, just came out today? And the answer is yes. There's zero difference whatsoever in copyright law for that to be the case, meaning that there's no special protection at all for anything being in the theater. So I can read what Jarvis has said, but the thing to keep in mind here is, while I know that you're looking at this from a political commentator and you're like, I should be able to comment on things that are happening as they happen, the factor to consider here is, there's no protection for there's no additional protection beyond this. So the idea that we think it's impossible that, like, the latest Avengers could just be on YouTube today if some dude was giving really hated the Avengers and was giving criticism on the director because he fucking hates the director or something, we think that would never survive, because there's no way, even, you know, split up, that you could have a brand new movie in the theaters on YouTube today. But you can. There is no protection for it. There is no extra law. There's no extra bit that does it. So we have to grant that if this ruling is to stand, that would mean that it would be okay to kind of do, as long as you're doing a similar level, like if Ethan Klein's shit was in the movie theaters, the same movie, that you could have it out the same day. Because there's no protection for it's in the movie theater, so it, you know, you have to pay for it. There's no factor for that. And I mean, that's probably the best example. Just use Ethan Klein's shit and put it in the movie theater. If Ethan Klein released The Nuke in movie theaters, do you think anything would be different in your mind?
There might be another law that you could sue on that might be different than saying it was a copyright infringement. It might be that you didn't have the license to record any of the original thing, but I don't know if that would necessarily be in the creation of your thing, it might be illegal, but it wouldn't necessarily be a copyright argument on the entire work itself. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. The licensing shit is all complicated. I don't know.
The problem is that the copying of a work is always going to be illegal until you create the derivative work, right? Regardless, like, if we get literal about it, if I download your stream VOD to my computer, courts have found those things to be infringing. That's copyright infringement. Like, I'm making a copy of your work and I don't have the authorization to do so. I only have authorization under the YouTube terms of service or the Kick terms of service to watch it in a specific way on their computer. From their servers. That's the way I'm authorized to do it. So it's, we break the law, and then after we break the law,
what part of the law is being broken here? If you watch a movie on your computer?
Not if you watch, if you make a copy of the movie to start editing it and doing things.
I don't know if that is.
Of course it is.
I don't think so.
Why do you think it wouldn't be?
My understanding is all software, generally speaking, you have a right to create copies for yourself. So as long as you're not distributing that to another person who hasn't also paid for a license, you're probably fine. Like, I can copy music, like an MP3 from my computer to my iPod, and that's not considered a copyright violation.
Oh, there was a case about this, actually. I think when it came to, actually, it was one of the early iPod MP3 cases. Fuck, what was that? So you think that there's a additional level of protection? Well, actually, I don't know if that's the case.
You can create. You're allowed to create copies for yourself if you want to start editing it and making a movie or whatever. As long as you haven't distributed it to anybody.
Well, here's a good question. Should you be able to? Is it legal to record if you do not distribute it at a movie theater? And what are those big fucking warnings on movies at the start?
At a movie theater, also? I don't think you have a license to. That's not your personal. That's not a copy that you're allowed to have. The license
there.
Well,
you're renting it. But when you buy a DVD, you don't own the DVD either. You're renting it. The same thing.
Well, like, for the DVD, I think you're allowed to make copies of the DVD for your own consumption. I don't think you can get in trouble for that.
No, that's not that giant fucking warning at the start. you know, the meme ones from when we were a kid. Warning, the FBI is coming to rape you if you make a copy of this.
I don't know if this is the normal DVD warning. This product, including its soundtrack, is authorized for private use only. All other rights are reserved unless expressly authorized by law or in writing by the copyright proprietor. Any copying, public performance, or other commercial use of this product, or any part of it, or any export, resupply, and or distribution by way of trade is strictly prohibited. Unauthorized reproduction, exhibition, or distribution may result in severe criminal and civil penalties. Sales and or rental rights for this product are specified on the original packaging of this product. I think this is generally just like you giving it to other people, distributing it to other people, or selling it to other people.
It says any copying is not allowed.
Yeah, but in the context of what? Any copying, public performance, or other commercial use implies it's like copying to give to other people or to distribute to other people. Or
unless authorized in writing by the copyright proprietor, any copying, comma, public performance, or other commercial use of this product, or any part of it, or any export, resupply. These are all individual things, not based around one thing. The first thing is any copying is not allowed.
Okay. I don't think that's true, but I don't know how we resolve that. So,
well, isn't there, if it would be worded another way, if that wasn't the meaning of this, it would be any copying in for the purpose of a public performance or other commercial use. Like it wouldn't be a comma.
It other commercial use implies the first two are commercial uses. That's what the implication is. And this whole thing deals with that.
Like, you know, you want to watch this movie, fine. What's not allowed? You may not murder, kill, rape, shoot your neighbor, make a copy, download a car. You know, like these things, these are things, individual things that you can't do. They're not based around any before or after. And if they were, they would be in there.
If I were to say to you, okay, with regards to my mom, you're not allowed to do the wiggly doggy, the upside down flotilla, or other sexual acts with her, you would assume the first two things are sexual acts.
I would assume that those two things would be sexual acts. Are those sexual acts?
I just made the words up. But I'm saying that when you say other...
Well, if you were to say any copying, public performance, or you have to ask Claude. I don't think this is the case of what you're.
It would be strange to have a law written in here where only one word has to do with like copying personally, and every other thing here has to do with distribution and sales and export. Like, this is all saying. Copying, public performance, or other commercial use of this product or any part of it, or any export, resupply, and or distribution by way of trade is strictly prohibited.
It's giving...
Unauthorized reproduction, exhibition, or distribution.
I see what you're saying. I just don't... I don't think that a court... what I'm saying is I can get in your head and see what you're saying. Is you're like, oh, well, this has a part and this has or other commercial use. So that must mean that the other parts also are commercial use. But I don't know if a court would treat it that way specifically. That's my only thinking on that. I don't know how. Isn't it like you're supposed to use a semicolon or something? An M dash if you have it be attached to it. Like they're supposed to be specific on this, right?
I mean, I feel like it's like if I'm reading this, I'm reading it in the context of everything else. If I was reading a law on stabbing, that like the incision into any person using blah 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 blah. And somebody would be like, oh, what about when you give somebody a vaccine? I'd be like, well, this law is like none of the language in this law is impacting anything related to it doesn't seem to have anything to do with like a medical thing. I just wouldn't apply it. When I'm reading this copyright warning, all of this seems to pertain to the commercial redistribution of or even just the illegal performance or redistribution of the underlying copyrighted material. So when I see any copying here, the feeling I have is they're talking about copying with regards to any of this commercial activity is what it seems like.
All right, I'm fucking asking Jarvis because I feel like this is probably a hyper-technical thing. So okay. I put in the prompt I gave Jarvis, under this warning, would copying this DVD for my own use be allowed? For instance, to make 10 backup DVDs for myself. I assume that's a somewhat fair...
Maybe. I mean, unless there could be... I don't know the answer to this, but like there could be other laws that you're breaking because they put in special things. So for instance, like DRM is digital rights management. There might be like a special thing in a licensing of a product where DRM makes it so if you bypass this, you're breaking some part.
Well, yeah, that's a DMCA. But I mean, sure. There's always the analog thing, right?
So I'm saying that if you're bypassing DRM, you're not necessarily like violating copyright by copying the DVD. You're violating a law by breaking some DRM mechanism that's implied in the license when you buy a DVD or whatever. I don't know how that works there, but
okay. I'll tell it to ignore if it comes back with anything. Okay, well, I'm just going to read it, and then if we need to narrow it down, we can. Short answer, no. So I said, under this, would this be allowed to make 10 backup DVDs? I said, short answer, no. And interestingly, the warning and the law both say no, but for different reasons. Starting with the warning itself, because it's narrower than it looks, authorized for private use only is granting you permission to use, i.e. watch, the disc privately. It is not granting permission to copy it privately. The very next sentence makes that explicit. It says that all other rights are reserved and that any copying of the product or any part of it is strictly prohibited. So private use and private copying are doing opposite work here. Making 10 backup DVDs is squarely copying, which this notice prohibits outright. The phrase you're leaning on actually cuts against you. Well, again, cuts against you. But the more important point is that the warning mostly just restates the default legal position, and a label can't grant you rights the law withholds anyway. So what does the law say? It depends on whether you are authorized, suggests. No, we're not in the UK, we're US. In the US, there is no general right to back up a movie either. The statutory backup rights, subsection 117, I'm not sure what this is of, applies only to computer software, not films. And separately, commercial DVDs are encrypted with CSS, and breaking that encryption, yeah, that'd be DMCA. Even when your underlying purpose would otherwise be harmless. As one summary puts it, the DMCA prohibits circumventing. Yeah, we don't care about that. We know the DMCA doesn't allow if there is copyright protection, but I'll prompt to say if there is no copyright protection. The periodic copyright office exemptions cover narrow things like extracting short clips for criticism or teaching. They don't include personal DVD backups. So in the U.S., it's the encryption cracking step for the DMCA, not the copying itself, that is a clear violation. So now I'm going to put for a second prompt here saying, I guess, like, let's say it's a CD with a movie on it and no copyright protection.
Well, are we just appealing to AI? Is that the whole, is that what we're doing?
Well, I mean, AI is at a point right now where it's a lot faster for us to understand. It's not an appealing to AI. It's getting faster to the point versus us having to go and find 500 cases and find out which case has legal precedent over the other ones, right?
Jarvis, make my point for me.
Dan's going to kill you. I guess, so under that thing, does that mean that every single time you install a game on your computer, or if you make like a copy of a disk image, or if you upload an MP3 somewhere else, are you violating your copyright protections? All of that was illegal?
I'll ask that after this one goes. But I think it said something about how software has a specific exemption under it. So software would be different. But I just said, let's say instead of a DVD, it was a CD with a movie on it with no DMCA protection. And you're starting to fucking piss me off, all right? You're a fucking AI user yourself. Don't act like you ain't. Motherfucker.
I wouldn't use AI in a fucking whole argument for all of it.
I'm not. I'm going off of my knowledge. And then for questions I don't know specific, which are things like commas coming in on, you know, if something has precedent or not, I'm relying on my instinct and fact checking with AI and making sure that.
Are you making sure that the sources it's linking are true?
Yes. I'm clicking the links. I'm a link clicker. I click links like nobody else.
Okay. I don't care.
Okay.
I hope you win.
Wow.
We're trying to get to the bottom of this. I do like clicking links. Okay, finally. This thing fucking takes forever. This is the right experiment to run because the DVD answer was really two separate barriers stacked on top of each other, and a CD with no copy protection knocks out one of them. Whether that actually helps depends entirely on where you are. The two barriers were the anti-circumvention rule, that's the DMCA, and two, the underlying reproduction rights, which was the fucking warning that was there. Okay, in the US, DMCA section 1201 prohibits circumventing a technological protection. If there's nothing to circumvent, it doesn't apply. So that whole problem evaporates. What's only left is a second barrier, and now that's a pure fair use question. And on that question, the U.S. precedent is reasonably friendly, but it's friendly for music, and it's never been squarely settled for movies. The leading case is RIAA versus Diamond, 99. I don't know if you want to pull that up. And when the court described copying your own music to a portable player as, oh, this is answering your question, paradigmatic, the fuck does that mean?
Related to the paradigm of something, paradigm shifting, or paradigmatic, oh, right. It's essential to the...
Paradigmatic, non-commercial personal use, drawing on the Sony Betamax time-shifting logic. The Real Networks court even said it appreciated the argument that a consumer had a right to make a backup copy of a DVD for personal use, but still ruled against Real Networks because that case turned on the encryption breaking. So I guess not super helpful there, not the copy itself. Strip the encryption away, and that distinction is exactly what would work in your favor. So a single personal backup of an unprotected movie disc kept for yourself has genuinely been plausible fair use footing by analogy, but I'd flag that no court has ever blessed it for a full-length film, and the recording industry's own position is famously two-faced, publicly saying that ripping your own disc is fine, while in legal filings, it has, to paraphrase, raped you if you tried to do it. So yeah, there you go. I think that is interesting that music has a additional protection, or at least additional case law over movie. But this actually might be irrelevant, because believe it or not, YouTube has copyright protection built into it. Little known fact, there is anti-circumvention methods built directly into YouTube, especially on live streaming.
Wow.
And especially on sources. So you would still be in violation of DMCA, which was going back to our original course, right? Our original thing?
Okay.
Like to make the copy initially is illegal, but then you can somehow surpass that by making a legal work afterwards.
Okay. Ready? Or do you want to keep going, or should we move on to the next?
No, no. That was my thing, is that the act of hypothetically taking a copy in a movie theater with a camcorder wouldn't specifically be any different than ripping from YouTube that has copy protection, DMCA stuff built in.
Okay. The courts have found that copying another work in its entirety is not dispositive as to infringement if necessary for the intended transformative use. I think we read on to this. In Seltzer, the Ninth Court found that copying the entirety of the original work did not weigh against Green Day. Even if the court were to credit plaintiff's claim that Cretosis copied the entirety of the retrospective, that would not be dispositive. Cretosis used retrospective clips in order to further the live stream experiment. Okay. Here, defendant showed that the entirety or nearly the entirety of the nuke. It is evident that to comment on and critique a work, clips of the original may be used. Parody must be able to conjure up at least enough of the original to make the object of its critical writ recognizable. Copying does not become excessive in relation to parodic purpose merely because the portion taken was the original's heart. The court in Hazanzadeh recognized that without using actual clips, the commentary and critique here would lose context and utility. Here, the extent and quality and importance of the video clips used by defendant was reasonable to accomplish the transformative purpose of critical commentary. Accordingly, the court finds this factor does not weigh against the defendant. And then the fourth factor is effect of the use of the on the potential market. The fourth factor asks what effect the allegedly infringing use has on the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. This factor considers the extent of market harm caused by the particular actions of the alleged infringer, but also whether unrestricted and widespread conduct of the sort engaged in by the defendant would result in a substantially adverse impact on the potential market for the original. Where the allegedly infringing use does not substitute for the original and serves as a different market function, such factors weigh in favor of fair use. In Campbell, the court found that when a use is transformative, market substitution is at least less certain and market harm may not be so readily inferred. Indeed, as to parody, pure and simple, it is more likely that the new work will not affect the market for the original in a way cognizable under this factor, that is, by acting as a substitute for it. Thus, where the original work and the new work serve different market functions, such that there is no market substitution, the new work is more likely to be fair use. The defendant's live stream is not a market substitution for the nuke because someone watching the former will have a very different experience from somebody watching the latter.
Can we pause or do you want to argue about this or go to the end? I disagree with this. And I think that we can point to obvious examples happening in DGG where Hassan's ranting, and people like, don't watch Hassan, watch this in bed instead. And it's some fucking movie streamer stopping and yapping and bullshitting every 5 minutes about it. That's a pretty good example of the fact that if you dislike someone, that you might want to give, there's still desire to watch the content, but you don't want that creator to benefit. So I think the judge is just naive on the fact of the value of the premiere of this thing not being on maximum views towards, I mean, you know how the algo works on YouTube, right? If you release a video, and
I understand
like
what you're saying, but what they're saying is that this factor only matters is if somebody creates product X, and then you're basically copying it, reproducing product X, and people watch your product X instead of the other product X, that counts as substitution. However, if somebody creates product X, and now you're creating a transformative product, X Prime, and people are watching X Prime, and they don't watch X because they're watching X Prime, even if all of that is true, watching X Prime doesn't count as substituting away from X because these are serving two different functions. So for the purpose of this factor, the court wouldn't necessarily consider it a market substitute because it's not a substitute. It's a new transformed work, even if it is taking away from the first.
That's the part I disagree with. And I think you would probably agree to a certain extent, again, coming back to our test, let's say, hypothetically, that Denims and Frogan and all these people could go and let's say that they were allowed to make this response to the nuke, the criticism of the nuke, but they can only do it for 3 or 4 days, hypothetically. Do you think that more people would have watched the nuke on the first day?
Probably, yeah.
A significant amount, I imagine. Right? Yeah. Instead of being 30,000 watching, it might have been, you know, hundreds of thousands.
Any amount, sure.
I don't know how many were watching, but a lot. So I disagree with the idea that this was not doing market harm.
But what I'm saying is that it doesn't matter if it's being substituted with another good.
I understand what you're saying.
Because I'm saying that other good is a transformed work, so it doesn't matter if more people are watching that and it's taking away from the first one.
Yeah, so I disagree with this framing on this front because I don't think, from when I looked through this before, that these market factors are supposed to be looked at uniquely and not as opposed to, oh, well, this one is the case, so now we have to look at this one. My understanding of this is that they were supposed to be, the four factors were supposed to be looked at independently so that they could make a
I don't think
basis.
It doesn't seem like the four factors are independent. It seems like some of them influence the other factors. That's why that first one, the court considered it a big deal, is because it was saying the first factor is going to influence how we view two of the other ones. But I don't know if other people disagree on that or if there have been other rulings where the court disagrees on that. But
So I can understand the idea that people would say that denim stuff was transformative. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is, personally. But that said, the reason I don't say that I come to that conclusion is I think that if this was to become the lay of the land, I think it means that any work could then be posted online in full so long as someone in that industry or someone who was a dedicated critic or expert or what have you pauses every 5 minutes to give 5 minutes of commentary on that piece of work. I especially don't think you should be able to do it on the launch day of when it happens, where, if anything, the market effect should weigh against the fair use and not the fair use, or sorry, the market effect should have weighed against it being a derivative, not the other way around.
I don't think the market effect.
Well, you're saying the market effect was affected by the idea that this was fair use. And I'm saying it should have been the other way around. The market effect was palpable. So as a result, the fair use claim should go the other way, not the other way around.
The market effect isn't supposed to have any bearing on whether or not, you know, it's whatever. All the market effect is trying to say is like, are you substituting one good for another and taking away from that first good with
and
the
I think
same
the
good.
Absolutely, yes.
But it's with the same good. So if you're substituting the first with a different good, then that it's
how
not
different?
Relevant.
Well, how different? I don't think it was different.
Well, how different per the first factor? That's what the court is saying here. So because they consider the work to be quite transformative in nature, then this market effect is heavily subdued because they considered a different product.
I think they mentioned the Sargon case in here, didn't they?
I don't remember. I don't know what that one's called.
Is Aquila, obviously, versus Sargon of Akkad. Maybe that's Hughes versus Benjamin. Well, anyways, there was a case where Sargon, you know the fucking really famous...
the woman he sued or whatever?
Yes, yeah, screaming. Mm-hmm. The idea is that he used, I don't even think he used the full amount of that stream, but he used a segment, and he was using it to make fun of the person, and he won, and he should have won. And that was absolutely fair use. The idea that you can, you know, take 10, 20 seconds of someone's stream, or even half of the stream, if it, you know, as much as you need to make your point, is which is what he did. He took the woman, you know, losing. It was like, I think it was called like lefties, you know, crashing out to Trump winning, and he was making fun of them. There was no market effect on the original, because no one that was originally watching that person's stream would have instead gone and watched Sargon's stream instead. There was no market harm. So I think that that was like an important part in determining the fair usage. It was like, okay, this is a completely different base that wanted to watch this piece of content. This is not the case here. You have people.
I understand you keep arguing, you keep making the same argument. I have to read that original, whatever case you're citing there. Also, I don't know if that was in the UK or the United States where they made that ruling. But what it's saying here is, I'm agreeing with you, and I don't even think the court disagrees, that there might have been people that watched this instead of Ethan's thing. But because it was a different product, that factor doesn't matter as much here.
Yeah, I don't think that should be true. I think it should, if you're going to lean one way or the other, I should absolutely be the other way. Like, how do I put this? The determination of something being fair use, I think, should probably come from the fact of like, how much does it decimate the original from people that would have otherwise wanted to consume the original?
No, not at all. We wouldn't want that to be the case at all. What if it's
an example?
Sure, literally anything. There's some movie that's come out, The Avengers 12, and people are like, okay, I don't know if I want to watch this movie or not. I'm going to wait for Destiny's stream to review it. And let's say I review it and I say, I give it a 1 out of 10. This sucks. Fuck that movie. Well, okay, Now I could be severely damaging the market or whatever from the first thing, because people watch my review and like, yeah, fuck that shit. But that doesn't matter. Who cares? It's not relevant at all to anything. You have the right to impact through your own word, through your First Amendment right, how much somebody consumes some other product. There's nothing – we wouldn't want to create a law around making that illegal or anything at all.
You're saying if you were to stream the movie?
No. Just if I were to give a review at all, even if I wasn't copyright infringed at all, I'd just give a review.
Well, that's different. We're talking about only in the scope of copyright infringement, right? Like, so it would have to be like, I'm going to wait for Destiny to, to stream it and give us his
I understand what you're saying, but if the court has determined, as per the first factor, that they feel like this is a transformed work, then it's just viewed as a different thing. So it doesn't matter if you're hurting the market from it. This is just a different thing now that we're looking at. It's allowed to take away. It could take away 99% of the market from the first one. It's a different product, so it doesn't matter. If the first factor was weighed so that it cut against her, and it's like, well, we don't really think this is very transformative, then on this factor, then the substitution would be a much bigger deal. Because they say, well, it wasn't very transformative. We weighed that factor against you, and you're using a non-transformative work to do market substitutions now against the original, and you basically just have a derivative work. Well, now the market substitution is going to hurt you. So this factor here, she only wins on because she kind of won on the first factor. But if she would have lost on the first factor, she probably would have lost on this fourth factor as well.
I understand what you're saying. I just, to me, it seems like something that's not compatible, at least with the copyright system we have in play. Well, I mean, hypothetically, let's say that this law becomes the lay of the land. Do you think that there's now essentially an opening for movies that are currently in theaters to just be on YouTube and be able to have them be defended and have them kept on YouTube if, you know, they're being criticized for another specific reason? Knowing that other people now will be able to take that high quality stream from YouTube and like download it and cut it out type of thing. Do you think that that is an acceptable byproduct of this ruling?
No.
Well, how do we square those two things then?
Because I don't understand why you would need to react fully to a creative work and how you could make a transformed thing. That just seems highly improbable here.
But the judge said that this was a creative work though.
No, but he's saying that Denham's viewing of it was transformative.
Right. So, but are you saying it's impossible to make a transformative work of a movie that's out?
It's much harder to imagine that. I guess it's possible, but I can't think of an example of it.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I guess I came up with the example before of like boxing and MMA. People have been screaming about fucking reality TV shows, things along those. Oh, yeah, maybe that's a great example. The reality TV show, like, let's say it's a PPV only, the final of the Real Housewives of whatever, done live. Should you be able to restream that and stop.
Sure.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
I'd try it. You could be the next case that goes up.
No, and... I don't want to try that. I don't think I want to be in a world where essentially that's the case that you could. I still think that's a creative work just because it's like the Real Housewives live. That especially if it's you know, you're generating profit off of it, and someone else was to just fucking freeboot it. I think that's a real. I don't think this ruling is compatible with the way that we have copyright in the United States law currently. That's basically my thinking on the whole front. Like, I know it's a very long-winded thing. I don't see where you're going to draw the line in the sand. You're going to say, well, I can't imagine how it'd be hard to criticize. I mean, Ethan Shit was a movie, right? He registered it as a movie with the Library of Congress.
That has no bearing on this.
Well, it has a bearing on the fact that he went through every step that a movie would go through, with the exception of he didn't put it in a movie theater.
Sure, but that has nothing to do with the fair use arguments or anything.
Right, but you're saying I can't imagine any movie in a movie theater being...
Like an Avengers movie. I can't imagine that. If it was like Donald Trump reacting to The Last Republican starring Adam Kinzinger, I could imagine a fair use thing created off of that, maybe, where somebody's watching the entire thing.
On launch day?
Sure. I don't know on launch day. I don't know why that impacts. I don't know what part of this would impact.
I think that, like, the sheer amount of market harm for something that obviously has a market has to impact the fair use part and not the other way around.
It's only a market harm if you created a derivative work and not a transformed work. If you win on the first factor, it doesn't matter how much you're harming the market. It's not considered part of the copyright argument.
Is that true? Like, is that what we're seeing?
Well, that's
like
what the judge said in this case. Maybe they ruled on that differently in other places, but when he's citing the Campbell case here, it seems to be saying that the market harm, when it says here, in Campbell, the court found that when a use is transformative, market substitution, quote, is at least less certain, and market harm may not be so readily inferred. So maybe on launch day, maybe you could make an argument there, but it's trying to say here that if it is the case that we've created a new work, when the new work is transformative, then you can't just substitute one for one and say, well, people didn't watch that because they watched this, because you're talking about the consumption of a new good.
I don't think the court... I'd want to look for other... What would be the question that we'd fucking ask this? Because I feel like this is a cherry-picked thing, and I can't imagine this being the standard of this. So we're saying, should a market harm have an effect on if something is fair use?
No presumption or inference of market harm that might find support in Sony is applicable to a case involving something beyond mere duplication for commercial purposes. Sony's discussion of a presumption contrasts a context of verbatim copying of the original in its entirety for commercial purposes with a non-commercial context of Sony itself, home copying of television programming. In the former circumstances, what Sony said simply makes common sense. When a commercial use amounts to mere duplication of the entirety of an original, it clearly supersedes the objects of the original and serves as a market replacement for it, making it likely that cognizable market harm to the original will occur. But when, on the contrary, the second use is transformative, market substitution is at least less certain, and market harm may not be so readily inferred. Indeed, as to parity, pure and simple, it is more likely that the new work will not affect the market for the original in a way cognizable under this factor, that is, by acting as a substitute for it, by superseding its objects. That is so because the parody and the original usually serve different market functions. It might be that because live streaming is like a new technology, maybe you could tease out here something in a court where you try to argue further on that factor. I don't know what Ethan argued in his filings, but maybe you could argue that while that might be the case in a traditional market where creating a parody takes time and you can't usually do that on launch day, it might be that with live streaming stuff, the market substitution effect here can be more similar or can be more recognized or cognizable because even people that like the original might watch a copy because this copy is available in a live streaming format and the original hasn't had time to permeate other platforms. Maybe, I don't know. But I don't know if that would even work here because I think the nuke did come out at the same time. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's so the question is just the how this is supposed to feed into the factors. And I think that's what the judge got wrong in my looking at here and also trying to figure out how the fuck this would survive in like the current day on YouTube, right? So
you keep saying how would this survive, and then you give the example of like reacting to the Avengers.
Okay, well, no, I'm trying to simplify it.
No, you're not. But you're creating an example that is so far outside of that would probably lose on every other factor that it wouldn't even be remotely close. If you want to say, think of some documentary, the Last Republican, that Adam Kinzinger documentary,
No, because this is found to be a creative work. You can't fall back to documentaries only. That's not the case. The court found that this leaned more towards Avengers.
Well, I think even I'm pretty sure those documentaries might be considered creative works as well.
Well, there's no special part in the copyright law that's like, oh, it's political. Okay, hold on. Like that, there's nothing in there that says that.
But the political part is going to lend itself to your work being more transformative than not. That it's just a sub consideration. So if it's just fiction, it's hard to imagine as much a transformative reaction to a fictional thing versus a non-fictional political thing where you might have a totally opposite political opinion and then you give your response to that. It's more easily understandable that that might be a more transformative reaction because political content lends itself to that more than works of creativity.
All right. Let me Jarvis it out a little bit. I'll keep it brief. So I asked, in a copyright case, if something is determined to have a great market harm, might that have an effect on determining if it's fair use? Or is it solely if something is fair use that determines if the market harm has any weight or value? And market harm, okay, so that's me going to Jarvis again. And market harm feeds into fair use determination. It's an input, not something that gets weighed only after fair use is decided. So that's why I thought it was. It's not supposed to be that any of these have
any bearing
on the other.
We're deciding fair use as a part of weighing and looking at all four of these factors. But the transformative nature was just the first factor, and that's what's feeding into this.
No, I understand that, but they're supposed to be looked at. And, well, anyways, fine. Even if you want to essentially do it, I'll keep reading and we'll argue over it. Fair use in the U.S. is governed by blah, 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 which lays out the four factors, which we know. The fourth factor is market harm. So when a court finds that great market harm, that finding weighs against the conclusion of fair use. The logic runs that market harm, along with the other factors, fair use determination, not the reverse. There's no separate step where fair use is established first and market harm is consulted afterwards.
We're not establishing fair use first. We're establishing the transformative nature of the thing first. It's the first factor. We're not saying it's fair use, therefore the fourth factor.
Fair enough. Let me. I did a follow up anyways. Is it possible that something can be transformative? So I said, is it possible that something can be found to be transformative and have a market harm and also have a ruling for the copyright owner? Yes, and this gets at one of the most important positions of fair use. Because fair use is a holistic balancing of all the factors, no single factor is automatically dispositive, not even transformativeness. The Supreme Court said this in Campbell versus Rose. A few ways it plays out. Campbell itself is the anchor. The court found Two Live Crew's parody transformative, meaning, not the same. I don't know why I'm explaining it to you. But it did not hand them a win. It remanded specifically because the lower courts hadn't properly evaluated market harm. So even in that case where something was absolutely transformative, because the lower court said, it's transformative, so market harm doesn't matter. They're like, no, it does. You're retarded. That's an important part of determining if this is fair use or not.
For which thing? What case are you citing here?
I'll copy paste this to you.
Okay. What part of this were you reading?
So my question is at the top, and then a few ways it plays out. So fourth paragraph, Campbell itself is the...
Campbell itself is the doctrinal anchor. The court found Two Live Crew is parody transformative, but it did not hand them a win. It remanded specifically because the lower court hadn't properly evaluated market harm, particularly harm to the derivative market, e.g. the market for a licensed rap version of the song. The court was explicit that a transformative parody could still flunk fair use if it caused cognizable market harm. So transformative plus market harm, owner can still win. It's baked into the foundational clause. Okay, so Campbell, that's the case we were reading earlier? Is there a – okay, Campbell.
I think earlier we were doing the Warhol case, Andy Warhol case.
Well, this one is cited a few times by this judge. So is this Campbell v. Acuff Rose Music? But I don't know if there were like earlier rulings on this, and I need to find another one because in this one I don't know if anything got remanded to the lower court. It sounds like they just wait.
Well, the Warhol one is
no, just
newer.
One at a
That's
time.
That's 2023.
Sure, but oh, just sorry. On the first thing. Okay, claiming the Two Lives song Pretty Woman infringed Activision copyright on Roy Orbison's rock ballad Oh Pretty Woman. The district court granted summary judgment for Two Live Crew, holding that its song was a parody that made fair use of the original song. The Court of Appeals reversed and remanded, holding that the commercial nature of the parody rendered it presumptively unfair under the first of four factors relevant under Section 107, that by taking the heart of the original and making it the heart of a new work, Two Live Crew had, qualitatively, taken too much under the third factor, and that market harm for purposes of the fourth factor had been established by a presumption attaching to commercial use. So it sounds like the the Court of Appeals reversed and remanded, holding the commercial nature of the parody rendered it presumptively unfair under the first four factors, by taking the heart of the original and making it the heart of the new work. So because they took the heart of the original and they used
that in this case, they took 100% of it, yeah.
Sure. So that means that the market harm had been established. So it seems like that because it had copied the heart, but it didn't seem, I don't know if they considered, maybe that wasn't enough to make it transparent.
Yeah, I think the judge was stupid. I mean, look, I would be okay
Campbell
with this.
As well?
No, sorry. And Ethan Klein Clays. Like, I would be okay with the idea of this going to court and Ethan losing. Like, I think that's certainly a possibility that could happen. That's fine. I don't think it would be likely, especially under a three-judge trial. But this is basically saying, like, yeah, your stuff was transformative, 100%. You were there. But this shit obviously was a market harm. What are you doing? Why are you setting this up? This can't be fair use. This is, like, complete market harm. You're raping this guy. And I think none of us disagree with the fact that, like, Ethan would have made a lot more fucking money if he had way more fucking views on the live stream, because that boosts the fuck out of your YouTube video when you have a fuck ton of people watching the premiere and they didn't. So this is basically saying that. It's like this thing did so much damage by no one watching the original that, yeah, you have to consider that that makes the other part of is it transformative less valuable instead of the other way. That's why I was saying, like, the inputs of it should be evaluated independently. And if you're not going to evaluate them independently, then this should be more important than the transformation of it.
Okay, so I'm quoting from Campbell here. We do not, of course, suggest that a parody may not harm the market at all, but when a lethal parody, like a scathing theater review, kills demand for the original, it does not produce a harm cognizable under the Copyright Act, because parody may quite legitimately aim at guaranteeing the original, destroying it commercially as well as artistically. The distinction between potentially remediable displacement and unremediable displacement or disparagement, is reflected in the rule that there is no protectable derivative market for criticism. The market for potential derivative uses includes only those that creators of original works would in general develop or license others to develop. Yet, so a derivative work is like a non-transformative work, right? So you can't just copy something and criticize it. So there's no market for derivative criticism. Yet the unlikelihood that creators of imaginative works will license critical reviews or lampoons of their own productions removes such uses from the very notion of potential licensing market. People ask for criticism but only want praise. Thus, to the extent that the opinion below may be read to have considered harm to the market for parodies of Oh Pretty Woman, the court erred, and that's why they overturned the law. In explaining why the law recognizes no derivative market for critical works, including parody, we have, of course, been speaking of the later works as if it had nothing but a critical aspect, i.e. pure and simple, but the later work may have a more complex character with effects not only in the arena of criticism, but also in protectable markets for derivative works too. In that sort of case, the law looks beyond the criticism to the other elements of the work, as it does here. Two Live Crew's song comprises not only parody, but also rap music, and the derivative market for rap music is a proper focus of inquiry. Evidence of substantial harm to it would weigh against a finding of fair use, because the licensing of derivatives is an important economic incentive to the creation of originals. Of course, the only harm to derivatives...
Well, I would pause right there, I would substitute that. So they're saying, like, this parody is a little bit different because, you know, licensing rap beats is a thing. And, you know, you can't just create a parody and be like, oh, well, fuck you. So, you know, you're supposed to license that type of thing. And I would counter that with saying that, well, when you release something on YouTube, everyone knows that, you know, in the first 24 hours, it's the most important thing of how popular your video is going to get. And by doing it in that, that's the equivalent of that. Like, so I would actually have less of an issue with this if they didn't react live. I think that factor is kind of the, you know, you're not licensing the beat type of a thing, right? So, like, that's my, you're looking at each case kind of specifically here, but that's like the direct market harm. Everyone knows the first 24 hours of a YouTube video is incredibly important to how it, you know, exists in the algo, how many more views it gets, how much revenue the creator is going to get as a result of that. So that's my substitute I would put in here where they're talking about the beats, basically.
Yeah, but the question is, like, I don't know. I don't understand how any derivative markets are harmed here, because we're not talking about a derivative market. We're talking about, like, the thing itself, unless we consider, like, a VOD, I guess, to be a derivative market.
Well, I mean, yeah, there was the initial live stream, and then there was the VOD, right? So both, like, you could say that the long-term views of the VOD were less because the live stream turned
into the derivative thing we're talking about, the derivative created off of Denim's copyrighted thing is still the derivative, is a derivative of her original copyrighted work. And I don't think that that directly competes with or harms the derivative market of Ethan's stuff. Like, let's say that I made, you know that movie Spaceballs?
Yeah.
Does Spaceballs get copyright, did they license Star Wars, or did they just make that on their own?
They made that on their own, for sure. There's no, why the fuck would they... I don't want to say something wrong right now, but I feel like
generally
that would
people
be something
will
that they wouldn't do.
People will pay for licenses just to be safe. Like, I'm pretty sure that single thing.
It's possible. I don't know. Let's see.
What's the one guy who makes all the fucking parody music?
Weird Al.
Yeah, I don't think he could probably survive copyright challenges to everything. I think.
But he normally asks.
But I think he licenses everything. So.
Oh, so before making Spaceballs, Mel Brooks asked for George Lucas's permission to parody Star Wars. Lucas was fine with it and said the only condition was Lone Star didn't dress like Han Solo. In this one, they did ask for permission.
Okay, gotcha. Not necessarily a license, but they did get permission for it. So, okay.
Well, I mean, it could have been a license.
Hold on, wait.
I have no idea.
And then there's another, because when I'm thinking derivative markets, the question would be is, what if you made this parody called Spaceballs and everything actually survived parody, but the characters actually did look identical to the Star Wars characters? And then let's say that you started making toys off of Spaceballs, and the toys were basically copies for Star Wars toys. Well, now you've harmed the original Star Wars franchise's derivative market with other things that wouldn't really be considered original works, because you've created those as derivative from your copyright protected work, but those things are such a copy of what could come from. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but kind of. But you have to keep in mind, in those cases, when you are releasing a movie like Star Wars, you're not just copywriting the movie. Like, they copyright the characters, the likeness of the characters, all that stuff. So that's inherent in that. And if you don't copyright that, I'm not sure you have direct rights to that. Like, that's why fucking Mickey Mouse is still, you can't do shit with it, right? Like, there's no Mickey Mouse thing, like, but Mickey Mouse as itself has copyright protection as an asset.
Sure.
So,
but I'm saying it looks like here when they were having this conversation, like, George Lucas specified, he did have one caveat, however, assuming this random fucking Facebook post is correct and quoting from a real thing.
That's why I'm saying the same thing.
Quote, you can't do merchandising. You can't have, you know, a dark helmet action figure because they'll look too much like ours. Like, that's Star Wars trying to protect its, like, derivative market. Even though they're allowing, like, a parody of Star Wars to be made with Spaceballs, they don't want the derivative markets to be damaged with anything that they might produce for action figures. So I don't know.
That would make sense, sure.
I don't know if a VOD is considered a derivative market of a live stream or any of that. I don't know how much these would even overlap if they're considered a totally different product, but...
Well, I mean, if you wanted to go back and reference something that happened in the nuke, you could land on Hassan's stream, you could land on Ethan's stream, you could land on Denim's stream, because there are so many people that have gone over bits and pieces of it. So you could certainly say that there's a derivative market where if 100% of those views went to the original, there would be more. But I don't know if you equate that one-to-one in those cases. I would certainly say a lot of those uses would be fair use. Like, you know, if Hassan pulls up a 30-second clip of Ethan doing whatever and criticizing it, that's going to be fair use. That's fine. And that's an expected result. But I think that when you do an entire stream and the totality of it is people that want to watch this content and would watch this content on Ethan's channel, but you've given them another option, I don't know where that lands. I mean, as I said, we see that in DGG. Hassan will stream and people be like, I don't want to give this fucker a view. Someone else restream it. So there's definitely that that mental mindset that people have
you
not
keep,
wanting
I
to
I understand you
someone.
Keep going to that thing, but the
I know
intent,
there's no
none of that matters. I'm just saying that
I know
if it's a totally different product and they don't want to watch the original, so they watch the second, but it doesn't matter as long as the thing
no,
is...
No, I know for the is it transformative, but it does matter for market harm. right? And as I'm saying, that market harm.
But the market harm only matters when you're using like a non-transformative thing.
No, that's not true. But we just showed you that that's not true, right? Market harm can lead into the other way as well. If you have a lot of market harm, it finds against fair use. That's what this thing just said.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what am I getting wrong on that?
We can agree to disagree. Okay.
Well, what? It was a case that there was a parody of a song, and they said this is fair use. Obviously, it's a parody. And then they appealed it, and the appeal said, you guys did not consider the fact that this completely is molesting these guys' ability to make money because you did this parody, and you allowed it. So it's not fair use.
Well, hold on. If you're talking about remanding, that means that they just said that they didn't consider it, so they needed to do that consideration in the lower court before it made it up to the higher court. Not that,
was it a remand or sent back down?
The first part of it was, but eventually they also, I think they won this fair use case as well, eventually, that when it got back up to the court after they reconsidered it.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that you have to look at the effect of a market harm as an input as opposed to an output that's determined by the first factor. Like, they all have equal value, and I think they're all, they should all be looked at independently. I don't think that's like, oh, this is definitely
that's fine, but
fair use
they're
criticism.
They're not looked at independently. No, nobody, even in the law, I don't think it's written
that
way.
Isn't that what it says that it's supposed to do, though?
No, you know, all of these are considered like with consideration for each other. It's like a wonderful mixing bowl of elements to all. I think it even says that in the original law that these are all taken together in a holistic. I don't think it says holistic, but. Defendant's live stream is not a market substitute for the nuke because someone watching the former will have a very different experience than someone watching the latter. Anyone seeking to watch the nuke, a scripted and edited documentary, would have a distinctly different experience. Watch your defendant's fragmented start and stop live stream, which featured spontaneous reaction, live chat interaction, sharp criticism throughout, and extrinsic source material. And then quoting the Stebbins case, finding a lack of a market substitution because anyone seeking to watch the live stream should have a fundamentally different viewing experience than a person seeking to watch the retrospective. Anyone seeking to watch, this is quoting from earlier court cases, quote, anyone seeking to enjoy the original on its own will have a very different experience watching the reaction video. And then a person wishing to purchase the sheet music for Magic in order to play or perform that song would necessarily purchase the sheet music for the song itself from the owner of the performance rights, not the sheet music for Rainmaker.
Oh, wait, there's actually, so this Warhol case, which is relatively new, 2023, the whole point of the Warhol case was to stop factor one from eating factor four, which is interesting.
Okay.
So I think that we're, you know what, one thing we can definitely agree on? This should not have been dismissed in a summary judgment at this stage. That's fucking crazy. Because there's certainly, this is not clear cut. Absolutely.
Well, what else would there be to, what considerations are we missing that would come out as part of the discovery and then whatever process?
How much market harm was done? Could be a factor, right? Apparently, a lot of market harm can be a factor in determining if something is fair use.
Yeah, but Ethan can lay all that on the complaint, right? I don't think Denham's is even challenging that there was market harm.
You might have to do jury interview. I mean, not jury interview. You might have to interview people from YouTube and ask, like, hey, in the algorithm, how does it work for the first day? How much does that affect? How much more revenue would this have if there was another 100,000 viewers? I think there's absolutely more evidence that they didn't have that could have made a determination as to...
Did Ethan put that in his complaint, saying that, like, we are not even able to determine the extent of the market harm because we don't know how much money was raised by this other thing, and so that...
I don't know. I can't... That was a long-ass fucking complaint. I don't know if that was in there.
Because if you put that as a huge thing, then maybe you could agree there, and then it would have to be read in the most favorable to Ethan Klein that maybe there's a lot more harm than...
My whole thing is that there is a indeterminate amount of market harm that should be discovered.
That might be your opinion, but if Ethan didn't contest that much, then it doesn't really.
He definitely. That was a long ass thing. There's probably a massive section in there about fucking revenue. There's no way there wasn't.
Well, there could be a massive section about it, but he might not be saying that there are any. Like Denham's might say, I'm not contesting any of that factually. Like, fine, we can say whatever market harm you put is there is fine, and then just read it and, you know, assuming everything Ethan has said is correct. But if Ethan isn't alleging that there's a whole bunch of harm that has to be uncovered, then it doesn't really matter if we're at the motion to dismiss, the summary judgment, or the the fourth fair use factor encompasses both the extent of market harm caused by particular actions of the alleged infringer and two, whether unrestricted and widespread conduct of the sort engaged in by the defendant would result in a substantially adverse impact on the potential market for the original and the market for derivative works. even when there is little direct evidence of actual market harm caused by the secondary use. To negate fair use, the plaintiff would need only show that if the challenged use should become widespread, it would adversely affect the potential market for the copyrighted work. Fourth reason factor also must take into account the public benefits the copying will likely produce. In other words, does not use serve copyright's goal of enriching public knowledge. Quoting from that Warhol case, when the original work is associated with dangerous misinformation, does not serve. Fair use weighs, factor weighs in favor of determining if your client video did not usurp demand for the copyrighted work, thereby resulting in a loss of infringement. Or to the contrary, the client video did not.
I mean, that's an important part, right? Because they,
sure,
they
but
were
I'm just
relying
saying that,
on, they were fucking over Ethan by like, oh, look at your last case. But the truth is that like Ethan's video against Matt Haas cost Matt Haas nothing. There was no market harm there at all. And now they're coming back and they're like claiming this like it's the same thing, and it's different. They didn't use the entirety of Matt Haas's video, and it had no effect on his video at all.
Sure, like, I'm just saying that to dismiss this at the motion to dismiss stage, we'd have to, and to say that it's not fair that they did that, we would have to assume that Ethan's argument here is going to substantially change from one to the other. And it doesn't look like he put a very strong argument here insofar as like it's going to substantially
there
change.
There might be more. I don't know if maybe they just didn't use the term market harm for additional stuff. I mean, we got those two sections. Is there chat? I'm not to say I'm role playing Pisco would be I engage with the other side, and it's just
it's a use.
You know, if I was I'll show you Pisco. I'll show you Pisco if you want to see Pisco, and it fucking sucks. Listening to that, and that's the reason. I'll do Pisco for the next 5 minutes. Steve won't kill me though.
Mm-hmm. In Hazin Zede, this is the Klein case that Ethan Klein is citing in his complaint in the original lawsuit.
Well, citing which part of the lawsuit? It's in one part, but not all of it.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm just reading this thing.
Okay, well, it should be clear with what you're talking about here.
What?
Sorry, I was role-playing Pisco. Sorry, it's going to piss you off way too much. I'm not doing it. Okay. I'm backing out, Chad. I'm sorry.
The court found the fourth fair use factor weighs in favor of a determination of fair use. The Klein video did not usurp demand for the copyrighted work, thereby resulting in a loss for the infringee or unjust enrichment for the infringer. To the contrary, the Klein video did not serve as a market substitute for the Haas video because the Klein video transformed the Haas video from a skit into fodder for caustic moment-by-moment commentary and mockery. Consequently, the Klein video did not offer a substitute for the original. So that argument that the judge is using seems to mirror the argument that Ethan used in the complaint. It could be that this was a poorly structured argument and Ethan shouldn't have relied on this, because it sounds like here Ethan is saying, well, in my original case that I had here, I couldn't possibly have harmed that market because I'm not creating a substitute of his good. I'm creating something that is highly transformed, which is probably a bad argument for Ethan to use when he's claiming earlier in this complaint that Denham's work is completely contrary to the purpose and intention of my work.
What did he say for the fourth factor? Maybe that's the case. Let me go through this and see it. Okay, isn't there a section above this or something? Or is it 62 where it starts?
62?
Okay, let me read here. The fourth factor must also take into account public benefits the copying will likely produce. In other words, does the use serve copyright's goal of enriching public knowledge from Warhol? When the original work is associated with dangerous misinformation, it does not serve the public benefit and results in actual and reputational harm to the market for the original work, even when the primary markets do not meaningfully overlap. Matt Haas, the court found that the... God damn it, the stream restarted. Hold on. I'll read from your stream. In Matt Haas, the court found the fair use factor weighs in favor of determination of fair use. The Klein video did not usurp demand for the copyrighted work in that case, thereby resulting in a loss for the infringee or unjust enrichment for the infringer. To the contrary, the Klein video did not serve as a market substitute. Yeah, I agree with this, because the Klein video transformed the Haas video from a skit. Yes. So there has to be more where they say why this is different than that.
Well, what they're saying here, this is Ethan's complaint. He's saying, because we won so hard on the first factor, we can't really ever lose on the fourth factor. It doesn't matter how much of the market we usurp, because we've created a new good and product, and copyright protections can't be used to get rid of scathing criticism of a product that might tank the consumption of that product. We didn't offer a substitute for the original. We created a new work. So Ethan's argument is, because we won so hard on the first factor, the fourth factor is almost auto-granted to us, which is when the judge
was... They didn't argue this factor at all?
What do you mean?
There's no shot. They didn't argue that they were harmed?
Who didn't argue that they were harmed?
Ethan did not... In this complaint, Ethan didn't say that Denham's harmed him monetarily.
I think he did say that, yes.
Where is that? Because that's what I want to see. Because that's like what we're getting at here is the idea that the judge would be...
Well, he said it earlier in the market substitute thing. If you control off market harm, he argues that people, you know, harmed him based on the video or whatever. But I'm saying that in Ethan's own complaint here, because this is Ethan's complaint, he's saying that because he won on the transformative nature, on the first factor, that he basically auto-won on the fourth factor. He's saying that in his complaint here. He's assuming, I guess, that Denims would have lost on the first factor, and therefore that's going to cut against heavier against her on the fourth factor. But when the judge was evaluating this, and the judge weighed in favor of the first factor, well, that also is probably going to cut against Ethan pretty heavily on the fourth factor. That's what's...
Okay.
I'm just saying that the judge is going to respond to the arguments.
I'll take some time to read through this. I feel like it's a waste to keep going through this without having every fucking detail of this goddamn thing. I'll let you get back to doing what you're doing. It's going to fucking kill me. God damn it.
Sure. Remember that when a judge is considering...
My only thing was I just feel like this should have gone. Maybe the attorney missed something. I just feel like it should have gone further. That's all.
Well, the copyright cases are weird because these are questions generally of law. Not remember, judges are for law determinations. Juries are for fact determinations. I don't know how many factual disputes there are going to be when it comes to... copyright cases. I don't know how many of these are ever considered by like juries, generally speaking. I don't know, because it's like what would even be the factual disagreements?
What I said before, but I gotta fucking handle this shit. We can pick this up. God damn it, you make me fucking run.
Well, it's not a run. We talked about this for like 2 hours, so I don't think people think you're running.
No, but I wanna continue. But now I have to fucking deal with something. It would be the great market harm would be influencing the other things. And even if you said that it was transformative, it wouldn't be enough.
Yeah, those are legal arguments, not fact
dispute
arguments.
Yeah, but I think those
are the same. So you could resolve that in the pleading stage just as easily as you could solve it in the summary judgment stage or in the trial stage. Like you don't need more fact. That's not a fact dispute. That's a matter of law that the judge can resolve at any time.
Yeah, imagine if Dan had fucking band powers too.
Damn.
Yeah, fucking Holocaust in this bitch.
Whoa. Okay.
All right. Maybe I'll be back later, depending on what you're doing.
Okay. I love you. Be careful.
Bye. Yep, bye.
Sheesh. Okay. Wait, was this dismissed with prejudice? I don't know, Kafka. This is like the tentative ruling I think that the judge issued a few days ago or yesterday, which I think means he plans on filing it, but the... I don't know. I read through it. It seemed pretty... I don't know what Ethan could appeal on unless... I feel like it's kind of brutal when the... I was about to say something on Twitter. I was going to say the judge is quoting from your own complaint a lot and ruling against you. But I guess on a motion to dismiss, based on the pleadings, it's you have to go to the pleadings and the complaints. So, but yeah, I don't know. How are they getting such quick rulings? I don't technically know if this was really that quick of a ruling because I'm pretty sure this was a ruling based on... the motion to dismiss, right? Which is a pleading stage filing. Are you going to watch Denim's YouTube video on this? No, Denim's is retarded. Why would I ever? Motion for judge. Let me make sure I understand, I guess. I don't know, actually. Notice of. Oh, is the notice like the 90-day, like, order granting joint stipulation to lift stay for limited purpose of filing a motion for partial judgment on the pleadings. So they both agreed to ask the court. Motion for judgment on the pleadings is here. Okay. They filed that on April of this year, April 17th of this year. Okay. And then I think this is Denim's filing for the... Is this a 12B3? 1? 6? It's one of those. Are all of these considered pleading? Fuck me. I'm just fucking retarded. Don't listen to me. Oh, no. Just kidding. Okay. This is a 12C motion for judgment on the pleadings. So motions for judgments on the pleadings are after the pleadings are closed. Okay, so I kept saying this is a pleading stage thing, but this is after pleadings are closed. But early enough not to delay trial, a party may move for judgment on the pleadings. I'm guessing this is still before, like, discovery, kind of, is closed, generally. If, on a motion under Rule 12b-6 or 12c, matters outside the pleadings are presented to and not excluded by the court, the motion must be treated as one for summary judgment under Rule 56. Okay, so this is if you file a 12b-6 or a 12c, different types of motions to dismiss, and you're asking for outside things to be considered, then it's considered a Rule 56 summary judgment. I don't know if... What did they say for dares? Is there a way to tell this? Okay, so this is the accompanying memorandum of points and authorities, the concurrently filed declaration of Benjamin Cassis, all pleadings, files, and records in this proceeding, all other matters which the court may take judicial notice. Okay, so would this be considered, is this a Rule 56 motion to dismiss based on the pleadings? This would be like a form of summary judgment? Kafka? Does it say that in here? I don't know how you'd even know that. All right, anyway. Jesus.
Remember to hit that like and subscribe, and don't forget the notification bell so that my videos show up right in your feed.